Welcome to The Read-Along,
a mini book club for your ears.
I'm your host, Scott.
I'm your other host, Anita.
And join us on a journey through a good book,
one chapter at a time.
Do you like talking about movies? Do you like talking about mediocre movies? Do you like talking about how you could have fixed mediocre movies? Well, I certainly do, and you can listen to me, Scott C. Bourgeois, along with my co-hosts Greg Beaver and Liam Creswick, as we give our notes, and I have some notes. You can follow it now on your podcatcher of choice or support it by visiting patreon.com/ihavesomenotes. You know, we've been independent for a while now.
Yeah, a bit.
Since the Alberta Podcast Network kind of came to an end, and we were forced to strike out on our own.
Again.
We're loosely affiliated with I Have Some Notes, my other podcast, which does run a Patreon. So a little reminder that if you want to support us, you can support I Have Some Notes, and it kind of indirectly does support us.
It's true.
But last little while, I've been wondering, how does a small niche podcast attract a sponsor?
I don't know.
I don't know either. I don't know what literary businesses might be interested in supporting a small niche podcast like ours. Like, you hear Casper Mattresses and MeUndies on every other podcast, but like, they're sponsors for like bigger podcasts, I would presume. I don't know that they'd be too interested in us.
I don't know either.
Yeah.
I mean, you never know. You'd be surprised.
I suppose. So if you're listening and you have a business that likes to just give out money, I mean, we wouldn't say no.
I mean, in exchange for things like plugs.
Yeah, I mean, we can be bought is basically what I'm saying. Like, we're not proud.
We're not so proud to accept that.
Yeah, so. Yeah, I don't know. Just something that's been rattling around in my brain the last little bit. Because there's a little bit of overhead to running this podcast. And we're able to mostly handle it, but yeah.
It would be nice if we didn't have to.
It would be nice if we didn't have to, yeah. So if you do want to give us some support, again, you can check out the I Have Some Notes Patreon, because that does indirectly help us out. Anyway, I guess with that said.
Completely off topic of our book.
We'll do a brief recap of our previous chapter, which was Perry Mortem 2.
Yeah.
In which Ben, one of the fairies who is friends with both Diana and Cornelia, gets murdered. He gets murdered with magic.
Yeah, it was horrible and not okay.
Yeah, and now he's dead. And that is what takes us into chapter 11 of The Undetectables by Courtney Smith. So Ben's body was immediately discovered.
As expected. And I was right. This is now chaos in the nightclub.
Yeah.
Right? They're screaming and yelling and running around.
Because, you know, the only thing I think that's probably as disruptive as shouting fire in a crowded nightclub is shouting murder.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty close.
Or at least indicating that somebody is in need of help. And then, of course, everybody goes and starts scrambling to go and check it out, right?
Yeah.
It's absolute chaos when Langdon comes up the stairs and is like, oh my God, Ben, help
somebody. Oh my God, it's been Ben, help! And then, of course, the nightclub, quote unquote, turns off.
Yeah.
Like, the regular lights come on, the music stops, like, everything
Yeah, like
goes...
there's a needle scratch.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And everybody begins, like, pouring downstairs to see what's going on. And the crime scene is immediately overrun.
Well, of course, because people are rushing in to see what happened.
And yeah.
People are trying to run to Ben's aid because they don't necessarily know.
Yeah. Mallory is kind of swept up in this. A couple things happen, notably, in this moment. Number one, Diana and Cornelia are both clearly upset.
Well, yeah.
Cornelia also brushes off Beckett, who turns back up at this point.
Okay, so I reread the line because it was very interesting to me. It stood out about Beckett, mm-hmm. how he emerges from the shadows again, takes an almost performative interest in the panic that is ensuing,
yep.
and then tries to like get Cornelia's attention. Like he grabs her shoulder and like shakes her,
and she's
like,
not,
"Hey," and she's having none of it.
Yeah, she brushes him off, but suspicious nonetheless.
It was that line about his performative interest in the chaos.
Yeah,
and I was like, "Dude, that gross." Just gross.
I say suspicious because on the one hand, that's going to like trigger little alarm bells. Oh, there's been something's gone on and I am very shocked to learn about it. But here's the thing. He was disinterested in being there in the first place and is clearly the kind of personality who would be amused by everybody being upset by something there.
Yeah.
So it could be nothing. He could just be a big jerk.
In all honesty, it's almost too obvious.
Yeah, like I said
that he's
earlier,
being suspicious.
He's so unlikable that it seems like it might be a red herring.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, we might be wrong, but that's really what it feels like.
Yeah.
Like, it's too obvious that he is suspicious.
Yeah, he's a big poser jerk. And he rubs our main characters the wrong way. But anyway, Mallory makes it downstairs, kind of swept up in the crowd. Diana and Cornelia are with her, and obviously there's initial shock to see Ben is clearly dead, having obviously been murdered.
Yes.
Then Mallory, like, the switch flips, and she realizes, oh, we're in a crime scene.
Mallory does that thing that I do. She switches into emergency mode.
Yeah. There'll right? be time later to have emotions.
Yeah. She will have her upset and her breakdown later.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, things need to happen, right? They need to preserve this crime scene. They need to investigate this crime scene, and they need to do it quickly before the actual police get there.
Yeah, and take over the crime scene.
Right.
So she quickly gets Cornelia to like start ordering people out and gets the troll bouncers to start like bouncing people away.
Yeah.
And cordon off the area.
Well, and she explains it with the truth, which is good. Like,
yeah.
This is now a crime scene. We need to keep it clean until the police get here. Like, you need to get everybody out. And the bouncers are like, oh, yes, obviously. You're right. Let's do the thing.
With the crime scene cleared, they then kind of set to work. Mallory specifically is like, if you guys need a minute, you have a minute. And then we need to
do this.
Investigate this before the police get here. And both Diana and Cornelia are like, yep, understood, got it.
Got it. And they both do that like deep breath. Okay, here we go.
Yep. And then they begin checking out as much of the crime scene as they can.
Yeah.
Very carefully.
Pictures like crazy.
Yep. Cornelia conjures up some gloves so they're not contaminating anything. They manage to snap pictures. And Mallory very quickly confirms that Ben appears to have been killed in the same way as Custer.
Oh, yeah. It's obvious. And now they know everything that we know.
More or less, yeah.
That the carving came from magic, that it happens instantaneously. All of those things that we knew about Custer's death that they didn't. Now they know because they have not witnessed a crime, but as close to it as they can.
Yeah, they were right on the scene. They were lucky enough, quote unquote, to be right on the scene. And some of the same questions that we had in the last couple chapters passed through Mallory's head as well. Like, this was a wide open location where the body could immediately be discovered. Like, this is a brazen act by someone who clearly isn't worried about being caught. Like, that all passes through her mind as well.
I cannot nod any louder. Yes.
Yeah. So they take stock of everything they can. And then
steal some evidence.
Hear the police coming. They do steal a little bit of evidence, but they justify it as if it's important to the investigation, we can pass it back to like Jacob, who can then pass it along to the police.
Pass it to the police.
Because there was an envelope found on
next
him.
To Ben.
Yep. Like a little message, maybe.
Maybe. I don't know. We didn't open it. We just collected it.
I assume that next chapter we'll find out more about that.
Well, yeah.
But the sirens have been getting closer, and Mallory and Diana and Cornelia quickly, like, vacate and are just out of the way as soon as the police come barging in.
Right.
The police are an interesting group of uniforms.
Oh, my goodness. I don't even know what to make of this.
Yeah. Like, we've already previously established that the police for the community are kind of like mall cops. Dressed up as real cops, because there's not much crime in this occult community.
Right.
And so they show up, but they're not super taking it seriously. They're being very flippant, which rubs Mallory very much the wrong way, because...
Well, someone is dead.
Someone is dead, and someone they know.
Yeah, and they're cracking jokes about it and making fun of the lead detective.
Yeah,
and
they...
like, not okay.
They clearly don't have respect for the one detective in their group.
Yeah.
Who is probably on the way.
Or the fact that there's a dead person right beside them.
Yeah, and they also make mention of that prison.
Yeah.
They kind of drop a little bit of info there, a little nugget of a clue.
Mm.
which is like, oh, well, a second murder in so many weeks, that's going to make a strong case for this prison the mayor wants to build. I wouldn't be surprised if he was the one going around killing people.
And then the nightmare shows up.
And then the mayor shows up, yeah.
Okay, why?
It's unusual that he shows up as soon as he does. Like, he shows up before the detective gets there, which means that he was informed about this very quickly. He already knows what's gone on by the time he walks in the door, that there's been another death and that it's probably a murder.
Yep.
And, yeah, he's not super helpful. And he gives, like, the barest minimum, like, apology about the death having happened, where it's like, oh, I'm sorry, you knew the person. What a shame.
The fact that he shows up at all. Like, since when do elected officials arrive at crime scenes? Like, that's not a thing.
I can't help but wonder if he showed up because he was going to be meeting Ray Quinn.
And he happened to be there for something else?
Yeah, like, he was already on the way for something else, and when he got there, there had been a murder.
Yeah, maybe. Because Ray Quinn is like, ah, sir, I'm glad you're here.
Yeah, and he materializes out of the shadows as well.
Again, yeah.
And, like, immaterial to the fact that a murder just happened in the basement is, like, right to business with the nightmare. And they have a little aside that Mallory, unfortunately, can't hear.
She caught some of it.
Yeah, we can assume that it's about the sale of the club and...
And lack thereof.
More land grabbing for the prison, yeah. And the mayor is just like, not right now.
This is a bad time. What are you doing? Are you that ignorant? Ah. So there's obviously a whole subplot of information there that we don't have a lot of yet, right?
Yeah.
So we'll see what comes to light with that as things go on. Mm.
Well, as with any good murder mystery, all of the suspicious people have suspicious things going on.
And are you being suspicious.
Pick away at them as you go, yeah.
Uncover all of the secrets and then...
And then
find your murderer.
Forget it, Jake, it's Chinatown. It's a cult town.
It's Rakuten.
It's Rakuten, yes. Anyway, at this point, the undetectables are kind of like swept out because...
Well, okay.
They don't really have any other reason to be there.
Well, they sort of do because one of the police officers is like, no, you need to stick around and like give a statement, doing actual police work.
Yeah.
Sort of. And then the three of them are like, yeah, no.
No.
Because we're not going to do that. We need to go.
Well, number one, because they have work to do. And number two, because, you know, grieving.
Yeah.
And on the way back, like, there is sad in the car.
Oh, 100%. I can't speak for Mallory. I don't think she's turned off her emergency mode yet. But the other two definitely have because, like, they were working through tears. Their friend is dead. Like, this is awful. And then, it's a very quiet cab ride home while they sort of get to process this fresh grief. It's awful.
And Mallory even gives them a little bit of assurance as well and is like, look, we were already determined to try to solve this case when it was Custer, a guy we don't even know. Now, one of our friends has also been caught up in this. Like, we're going to be doubly determined to catch this guy. So, this is going to happen.
Yeah.
Justice will be done.
Justice for Ben!
Yeah, that's pretty much where the chapter kind of rolls
Yeah,
rolls
and
off.
that's where we stop.
Yeah.
We've collected our evidence. We've witnessed a crime. We need to run away and solve it.
Well, we witnessed the aftermath
of a crime. The aftermath of a crime. That's true. Yeah. That's true.
So it'll be interesting to see what they make of the clues that they picked up at this crime scene and maybe find out what's in that envelope.
Yeah.
As we move into, I guess, chapter 12 of our novel, which we'll want to read up on in time for next week. Of course, as always, you can give us a little rating and a review on your podcatcher of choice.
We always like those.
And it helps us out.
They're nice.
You can also reach out to us on social media.
Absolutely. We are on X, formerly Twitter. Instagram, Facebook, Goodreads, and now Blue Sky. We are at The Readalong on most of those.
Correct. And you can also send us an email.
Absolutely. You can send all of your digital lovings to thereadalong@gmail.com.
And with that said, as always, we love you very much and we'll see you next time.
We miss you, Ben.
Thank you for joining us on The Readalong with your hosts, Anita and Scott Bourgeois. All Readalong music is by Kevin MacLeod at Incompetech.com. Cover art is by Aaron Beaver. Be sure to join us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at The Readalong, and check out our group on Goodreads.com.